I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
I see that the White House and federal officials are repeatedly saying that Facebook and the federal government should be partners. We're on the same team. Officials are demanding answers. I want an answer. I want it right away. When they're unhappy, they curse them out. There are regular meetings. There is constant pestering of Facebook and some of the other platforms, and they want to have regular meetings, and they suggest, why don't you, they suggest rules that should be applied, and why don't you tell us everything that you're going to do so we can help you and we can look it over. And I thought, wow, I cannot imagine federal officials taking that approach to the print media, our representatives over there. If you did that to them, what do you think the reaction would be?
Ah, very good question. Yesterday from Supreme Court Justice Alito. This is, of course, involving the case that considers what was brought by Missouri and Louisiana together. Missouri at the time represented by Attorney General Eric Schmidt, who is now a U.S. attorney, and now Andrew Bailey handling the case. And the issue being, how much are social media platforms controlled, directed, and shutting down free speech at the direction of the federal government? And Alito said, I was amazed when I saw these meetings. You do remember the numerous times that we were told, even directly from the White House, they admitted, yeah, we talked to Facebook and YouTube about the COVID information, and we want to put up warnings if we don't think it's the correct information. But they went farther than that. They were banning people who said something they did not agree with, be it YouTube or Facebook or Twitter or whatever social media you were using. And in fact, one of the cases that were being cited in the 500-plus page report involved what happened at News Talk STL on the Vic Porcelli pro, Vic Porcelli show. Thanks, Vic. I'm sorry I blew it. But between Vic and Ken, when they were raising the issue then, we are at a point in this nation where apparently we're willing to just stand by and let our First Amendment rights be taken from us. And one member of the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday actually suggested, well, the First Amendment is hamstringing the government in controlling you. Well, by God, it should. It's part of the U.S. Constitution. But as you will hear from her a little bit later, I don't think she buys that as an essential part of our Constitution or a Constitution part whatsoever. All right, glad to have you on board with us. Here we are, March 19, 2024, the first of 2 hours of Larry Connors USA back-to-back. And reminding you, we're here Monday through Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. If perchance you miss it, you can always pull it up at Larry Connors USA Facebook, LarryConnorsUSA.com. And we're also streaming video when we're on the air. You can also pull that up if you miss it. And the video being streamed at News Talk STL, Rumble, Facebook, Twitter, Larry Connors USA, Rumble, Facebook, Twitter. It's all available for you. So again, this case, when it comes up, it's been extremely anticipated. It is probably the biggest case to date on defining the First Amendment and the government's role and how it should be controlled from censoring you. Because they had all these inroads to the social media companies, and they were all basically doing their bidding. They were holding these meetings, even sometimes at the White House. Well, what should we say about this? How should we handle that? This is the government telling social media companies. Now, they will say, And I'm running a commentary throughout this day. I've been running it saying they will claim there was no coercion where there's direct and there's implied. And if the government agent is sitting across from someone at YouTube or Twitter and saying, you know, this really doesn't fit our agenda, they get the message. You don't have to threaten to shut them down. Once again, let's go back to Justice Alito raising the issue that really you have the federal government using their ability to club, I mean actually use a club against the social media companies to make sure they stay in line.
Imagine federal officials taking that approach to the print media, our representatives over there. If you did that to them, what do you think the reaction would be? And so I thought, you know, the only reason why this is taking place is because the federal government has got Section 230 and antitrust in its pocket, and it's to mix my metaphors, and it's got these big clubs available to it, and so it's treating Facebook and these other platforms like their subordinates. Would you do that to the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or the Associated Press or any other big newspaper or wire service?
So there's a lot packed in there. I want to give you one very specific answer first and then step back out to the broader context. So specifically, you mentioned demanding an answer right away and cursing them out. The only time that happens is in an email that's about the president's own Instagram account. It's not about moderating other people's
content. Okay, we'll put that aside. There's all the rest. Constant meetings, constant emails. We want answers.
Right.
We're partners. We're on the same team. Do you think that the print media regards themselves as being on the same team as the federal government, partners with the federal government?
Very good question. And the answer being given by Brian Fletcher, representing the government, saying, well, really, this all of that you're talking about just really dealt with one thing about the president and what he was doing on his Instagram account. You know they're talking about Trump at that point. Well, I don't care who you're talking about. You don't have the authority to shut it down or direct the social media company to do it or block the person doing it. But there have been other cases. He wants to say there was only that one case. I'm asking those of you listening right now, how many have you been blocked or censored on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, whatever social media platform you've been using because you put something up that somebody decided in a back room, that doesn't fit our standard. And you cannot find anyone that really is qualified to make that decision because they don't exist. They just gather up a bunch of folks and say, you are now our media control people, and you're making your decision arbitrarily on their own. Now, if it involves the government, the CDC, they're going to claim, well, you can't talk about ivermectin. You can't even tell your personal story about how you took it and it helped you, even though it's your story and it's a fact for you and your family. You can't do that. You might encourage others to do that and not get the vaccination. Where's your freedom of choice, much less freedom of speech? And then you've got Alito going back again to this federal prosecutor, Brian Fletcher, and he brings up that very thing we're talking about. They want to deal with COVID? Yeah, let's talk about COVID.
So, constant meetings, constant emails. We want answers.
Right.
We're partners. We're on the same team. Do you think that the print media regards themselves as being on the same team as the federal government, partners with the federal government?
So potentially in the context of an effort to get Americans vaccinated during a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic. And I really think that piece of context, it doesn't change the First Amendment principles, but it's relevant to how they apply here. And I think it's important to understand that at this time, this was a time when thousands of Americans were still dying every week, and there was a hope that getting everyone vaccinated could stop the pandemic. And there was a concern that Americans were getting their news about the vaccine from these platforms, and the platforms were promoting, not just posting,
well,
but promoting bad information.
I understand all that, and I know the objectives were good, but once again, they were also getting their news from the print media and the broadcast media and cable media. And I just can't imagine the federal government doing that to them. But maybe I'm naive. Maybe that goes on behind the scenes. I don't, but I, it struck me as, wow, this is not what I understand the relationship to be. That's all I
But I do. I think this is important because I have the same reaction that you do, that these emails look unusual. I think the idea that there'd be back and forth between the government and the media isn't unusual at all. When the White House press secretary on July 16th is asked about this by the press at the time, what she says is, of course we talk to the platforms just the way we talk to all of you when we have concerns about what you're doing, when we have information that you might find helpful. Now, there's an intensity of the back and forth here, and there's an anger that I think is unusual, but the context for that, I think, is that these platforms were saying publicly, we want to help. We think we have a responsibility to give people accurate information and not bad information, and we're doing everything we can to meet that goal. That's where this language of partnership comes from. It's not just from the White House. It's these platforms, which are powerful, sophisticated entities, saying we're doing the best we can. And the anger, I think really most of the anger when you read the emails, and I appreciate that you have because I think you have to look at them in context, the anger is when the officials think that the platforms are not being transparent about the scope of the problem or aren't giving the information that's available.
No kidding. No kidding. Exactly, that's it. Because you were not allowing information that countered what was on there. And there was where the anger was, obviously. Because you've got to bring this stuff to the forefront. You've got to let everyone have a say. And it wasn't just that the social media was trying to hold back and say that they were not directly involved. They were being involved. And Justice Alito, you were correct. You were not naive. It has happened with publications like the New York Times and all the others. Remember when the New York Post broke the story about the Hunter Biden laptop? Remember we talked about that? They were the only one running it. And their social media platform got shut down. Why? Because the government said it's Russian collusion. And not even the New York Times and other liberal outlets, publications, were running it because they didn't want to be linked to Russian collusion. And it was all a lie. But then we, by the way, Justice Alito pointing out the government is treating social media platforms like their subordinates. That's exactly what they were doing. I'm looking at some responses from Charlie Kirk. He said, you cannot outsource censorship and call it constitutional. Dead right. You cannot have the FBI harassing Facebook and not call it coercion. Dead right again. You cannot suspend the Constitution because you say COVID is a once-in-a-lifetime event. Dead right again. And then we come to Justice Brown, the female justice who doesn't know what a woman is. During the oral arguments, and by the way, they took 2 hours for these. That's an extended amount of time for oral arguments in this case. And she began to raise a question with the government representative and sense that maybe this issue about First Amendment really shouldn't be held up to such high esteem.
There may be circumstances in which the government could prohibit certain speech on the internet or otherwise. I mean, do you disagree that we would have to apply strict scrutiny and determine whether or not there is a compelling interest in how the government has tailored its regulation?
Certainly, Your Honor. I think at the end of every First Amendment analysis, you'll have the strict scrutiny framework in which, you know, in some national security hypos, for example, the government may well be able to demonstrate a compelling interest, may well be able to demonstrate.
All right. Not every situation will in which the government engages in conduct that ultimately has some effect on speech necessarily becomes a First Amendment violation, correct?
Maybe not necessarily, Your Honor. I guess the top line question I would ask is, has the government set out to abridge the freedom of speech? And in this case, you see that time and time again, because if you control
that's not the test for First Amendment violations.
Your Honor, this flows from the plain text of the First Amendment, right?
No, I understand, but we have a test for a determination of whether or not the First Amendment is actually violated. So in certain situations, the government can actually require that speech be suppressed if there's a compelling interest, right?
No, I can't think of a compelling interest. She was talking to the Louisiana Solicitor General, and she also added, my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. And she's fine with that. But you try to silence her speech, I wonder what would happen. More details breaking down yesterday's story from the constitutional law expert, from a constitutional law expert on the SCOTUS hearing. But in the meantime, our Border Patrol crisis continues to escalate.
Top intelligence officials cite the elevated flow of migrants to our southern border as helping to create a landscape criminals and terrorists can exploit, with a disturbing incident now added to a growing list of them. 22-year-old Basil Bassel Ibadi from Lebanon, arrested earlier this month in El Paso, Texas, reportedly claimed he's a member of Hezbollah, hoping to make a bomb, and his destination was New York, according to the New York Post. An alarming episode, but one that supports a warning given just last week by FBI Director Christopher Wray.
There are a whole host of threats that emanate from the border.
Those threats laid out in an astonishing rise of those on the terror watch list who have been apprehended at our border, from zero in 2019 to 15 in 2021 to 169 last year, and already at least 58 this year, though Ray says this is not the biggest concern.
The national security ramifications of the issues at the border are better reflected in some ways more by what we don't know.
Yeah, what we don't know. That's frightening, isn't it? I want you to hear, for that was from the National Desk publication and their outlet. Ron Vitello is a former Border Patrol agent. Here's his take on where we stand right now.
We are in a proxy war in the Middle East. We are in a proxy war in Europe. And if we don't believe that the Chinese communists, the Russians, or Hezbollah is not going to take advantage of the chaos at our border, then you're not paying attention. This is the threat that we all face. You talked about the gotaways numbers. You're right to characterize that. That's just what the Border Patrol saw but could not apprehend. That's not the thousands and thousands that are getting away, that are not being seen by anybody in law enforcement, but are coming to a city and a town near you. And we know that the numbers of young men from China are off the charts since the start of this presidency. And that threat, again, is going to be, we're going to pay for this in ways we are not imagining right now, because they've allowed this chaos to continue at the border, and they sit on their hands and they watch thousands and thousands of people come and get encountered, thousands of people come and get away, and then on top of that, the releases of people all over the country. We see the cities and towns that are suffering from this organized crime that just got here from Venezuela, and all the existing threats, things like Hezbollah, the MS-13, et cetera. That's the problem that we're facing. And when you let 7 to 10 million people come into the country illegally, that's, we're going to pay for this.
Yeah, we are going to pay for it. And then there's the northern border. In the beginning, a lot of illegals coming across our southern border would go all the way across our nation, try to get into Canada. Canada's catching them and deporting them. And now we're seeing an influx of 12,000 migrants apprehended crossing illegally from Canada last year. That's a 240% surge from the year before. So they're thinking, the southern border's open, let's also try the northern border. We'll get into more details on the Canadian issue coming up, and our issue as well. Coming up in the next hour, airlines flying Boeing planes are trying to convince passengers planes are safe. But how many parts are coming from China? And coming up next, our constitutional expert, lock and load, ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Pigeons, they are everywhere, and they're very good at dive-bombing freshly washed cars. Wellington Environmental reminds you, those droppings are more than a nuisance. They can be a major health issue, especially massive droppings on buildings or in parking garages. So who do you call to safely clean it up? You do what many hospitals, universities, public buildings already do. You call Wellington Environmental. Wellington Environmental has been dealing with all kinds of hazards for 35 years. Special people, special skills, special equipment. Wellington gets it done. So to avoid health issues ranging from pigeon droppings to mold to chemical leaks, contact Wellington, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. WellingtonSTL.com. Wellington Environmental, your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps in the afternoon.
Horace, Americans individually have lost over $4,000 in income and over $7,000 where you have a household with both parents working.
It shouldn't be it's the economy stupid. We should just say stupid. It's the economy. Unbelievable the devastation that Americans are feeling.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps, weekdays at 3:30 on News Talk STL.
Are you thinking about buying medicine online? A search for online pharmacies yields more than 20 million results. But which ones can you trust? Medicines bought from unlicensed online pharmacies can be dangerous. You may get a fake drug, your condition may get worse, or you may experience a bad reaction. Don't put your health at risk. To learn how to find an online pharmacy that's safe and legal, visit fda.gov/besaferx. A message from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration.
Great news for my sponsor, Napoli C. And it's no surprise to me, nor hundreds who have dined there. The first time I entered, it was clear Napoli C is unique. The decor, the fish, imaginative cocktails. And, of course, Napoli C is right next door to Napoli 3 in St. Charles. Napoli 2 is in Town and Country. The original Cafe Napoli is in Clayton. And I'm honored to endorse each of them. Visit any of the Cafe Napolis.
This is News Talk STL.
Oh, I can feel my face when I'm with you. My love it, oh. And I know she'll be the death of me. At least we'll both be numb. And she'll always get the best of me. The worst is yet to come. All the misery was necessary when we're deep in love. Yes, I know.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. My guest is Zach Smith, a Heritage legal expert on the Constitution. Zach, glad to have you on board, sir.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me on the show, Larry.
You bet. Let's pick up with the obvious case involving Missouri and Louisiana and the nation as a whole regarding social media companies and the control of the federal government, yes or no on them. And, of course, we know what the answer is. But the court spent something like 2 hours in oral arguments. That's an unusual extended amount of time for oral arguments.
Yeah, that's right, Larry. It is, although it's something that's been more common in the post-pandemic world when the court tweaked how it deals with oral arguments and structure for oral arguments. But look, fundamentally, in this case, Murphy versus Missouri, the court is being asked to decide whether the federal government violated the First Amendment when it essentially used coercive tactics to try to get social media companies to remove posts that they disagreed with. And if you look at the facts of these cases, the government's cursed at officials, they sent veiled threats to these officials. It's undisputed the government exerts a lot of control over social media companies. The question is whether that was just the government using its bully pulpit or whether it was inappropriate coercion trying to get their critics silenced.
May I question sure. you when you say inappropriate coercion? What's appropriate coercion?
Well, I think what the government would say, and what they did say yesterday at oral argument, they said the government is free to say we disagree with this view.
Well, that's one thing.
This view is wrong.
Yeah.
Right. And I agree. That's one thing. And that's how the government sought to portray this conduct. But I think the facts in the states during their time to respond made clear that this wasn't just the government saying we disagree with this
right.
speech. It was the government trying to silence it, which is something very different. You're absolutely right about that.
Well, I've been dealing with a commentary all day today on that very point, that coercion, whether it's implied or direct, is still coercion.
Well, that's absolutely right. And look, again, I think it's important to keep in mind the vast coercive levers that the government has and can use against social media companies in particular. And so, this is a very important case, although part of the issue that the court addressed was whether the plaintiffs in this case, the people bringing the suit, had standing to do so, essentially whether they're the proper parties to be raising these claims. And so there is a chance that the court could dispose of the case, get rid of it, without ever reaching these very important First Amendment questions and dispose of it on those procedural grounds.
I'm glad you raised that. I'm glad you raised that because the very fact that they accepted it suggests that they believe it has standing. Am I wrong?
Well, it depends, Larry. You know, it only takes four justices to agree to hear a case. And obviously it takes at least five justices agreeing to resolve a case. And so there is a possibility that there were four justices who wanted to hear the case, maybe thought they were standing.
So we don't know those numbers, or we don't know that background?
We don't know those numbers, which four justices or how the justices vote to agree to grant cert, to agree to hear a case. That's not public. We don't know that.
And why is that not? Why is that not public?
It's a court practice. It's court practice. It's been that way for many, many years.
And why does it continue?
Well, it's a good question. But look, I think what we will have to wait and see, and what is public, is how the justices vote and how they decide the case. But certainly there were very grave First Amendment issues at stake in this case. And unfortunately, I'll tell you, Larry, based on the way the oral argument went yesterday, it seemed like a majority of the justices were not sympathetic to Missouri or Louisiana and the First Amendment claims they were bringing.
I took note of what Justice Alito said, and his quote is, "The government is treating social media platforms like their subordinates."
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exactly right, and I think Justice Alito also made the point that you probably wouldn't see this type of behavior against traditional media sources like newspapers or cable channel outlets. And part of the reason Justice Alito said that is, again, because the government doesn't have as many levers at their disposal to try to control those media outlets as they do with the social media companies. And again, this idea that the government is using its power to try to coerce people into silencing dissenting views is something that should trouble all of us as Americans.
And of course, he was referring to Section 203, which is granted these companies versus publications and normal broadcast operations. And the difference being that they cannot be sued for anything that appears because they don't have any control over who puts it on.
Well, that's right. Certainly Section 230 is a background principle at play here. Keep in mind, too, the government can bring antitrust litigation against many of these social media companies. That's something that's being hotly discussed right now in a number of sectors in D.C. And so there are a number of mechanisms that the government could use. And certainly if you read some of the emails and exchanges between White House officials and these officials at social media companies, you know, it certainly doesn't seem like a polite request. It reads more like a demand to do this or else. And that's something very different than
I also had to ask, really, it's back to which came first, the chicken or the egg. Were the social media companies doing it and with the blessings of the government, no issue? And then when they stepped out of line, then they kind of got, you know, a little wink, wink, you need to move back. I mean, clearly there was a double exchange going back and forth between them. The White House even admitted, we confer with them, we talk with them. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. But when you do it with such an iron fist and a bullet ready for them in case they refuse, that tells them you're going to walk this line. But I'm not sure they weren't willing to do it anyway.
Well, and I think you're raising an important point here too, Larry. Whenever the government, you know, quote, asks you to do something, there's inherently a coercive aspect to that, particularly when you're in a heavily regulated industry. And so, you know, even if the threats and the statements made by the White House weren't as overtly coercive as they appear to be, as overtly aggressive, still there's coercive pressure and something that we should all be attuned to, regardless of what the court does with this particular.
You're listening to Jack Smith of the Heritage Foundation. The very point you raised there, as much as I praise Justice Alito for raising the question about how they seem to be subordinates of the government, he also said, I don't think you'd ever see this happening with the print media and normal media and so forth. He said, maybe I'm naive. And I have to admit, Far be it for me to call a justice of the Supreme Court naive, but I am, because we know damn well the New York Times and others kept the story of the Hunter Biden laptop story silent, ignored it, did not even pay attention to it. On the allegation from the FBI, it was Russian collusion. It was 18 months after the election. The New York Times acknowledged, yeah, it's real, exists, and these are all facts.
Well, dare I say, Larry, you're sounding a little bit like Justice Elena Kagan in some of her statements at oral argument, because she also pushed back against that statement that Justice Alito made. So did Justice Brett Kavanaugh.
Right.
But look, it'll be interesting to see what the courts decide. And there was one statement in particular by Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
She made oral arguments.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't mean to short-circuit you, but, you know, she essentially said, it's gone somewhat viral, you know, that she was concerned that the First Amendment was essentially serving as too much of a check on the government.
Hamstringing the government.
Yeah, hamstringing the government. And I think if you stop and think about that, and the reason that statement's gone viral is because if you think about it, that's kind of the entire point of the First Amendment.
Yeah, so it's, absolutely. I mean, and she raised a thing like, if there's something going online, a bunch of kids showing teenagers jumping from windows at different heights, and they might encourage other kids to do it, and somebody will get hurt or killed, then the government needs to step in and stop it. Well, didn't your mama tell you that if the other kids jump out of the window, you don't? I mean, do we have to have the government step in on that?
Well, apparently for many on the left, I mean, I don't think it will come as a shock to you, Larry. They want the government to serve as a nanny state, essentially.
Right.
But look, this idea that a Supreme Court justice would be concerned that the First Amendment may hamstring the government too much, it's somewhat of a jarring statement when you first hear it.
Well, the chief judge of the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Louisiana, in his statement issued July 4 last year, said basically this is the most massive attack against free speech in U.S. history.
Well, I think certainly that is the argument that the plaintiffs in this case are making. It certainly is chilling when you see many of the emails, other correspondence the White House sent to these social media companies. And again, you know, if the whole idea of the First Amendment is to prevent the government from suppressing speech they don't like, if the court decides with the Biden administration, it could certainly set a very troubling precedent in that area.
Well, Ketanji Jackson, Justice Jackson, continues to really throw me on this. She said, this is a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic. In other words, they would have had an excuse to impose martial law. She didn't bring that up, but that's another option that they could have enhanced on this once-in-a-lifetime experience.
And it's kind of ironic, too, Larry, because we now know many of the things that were initially said by the government
weren't
factually accurate. The science behind it was not proven out. And so to somehow allow the government to suppress those dissenting views that were raising very real, very legitimate questions about what the government was saying, the policies they were prescribing, again, if that's not the purpose of the First Amendment, to protect that type of speech, then what is the purpose of it? I think is a question many people are rightly asking.
Well, of course, when this session resolves, I mean, it settles, and we're looking for a decision normally, what, in late summer possibly?
That's right. The court ends its term at the end of June, so I would suspect this case will probably come out toward the end of the court's term. And so beginning in June is when I suspect we should start looking for a decision.
So where do the cases, for instance, very quickly on Trump and his claim about presidential immunity, where does that stand?
The court hasn't heard oral arguments in that case yet. They're planning to hear it in April, and then I would suspect a decision in that case at the end of June as well.
Oh, they would wait that late, that close to the election. Okay.
I would suspect so.
All right. Yeah. Zach Smith, the Heritage Foundation, thank you again, sir.
Of course. Thanks for having me on, Larry.
You bet. Speaking of President Trump, he's suing ABC News. I'll tell you why when we continue.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
I got an email which brought a smile. A woman named Mary wrote me, "We are purchasing a new roof from John Beale based on your recommendation. I thanked her then. I do it again now. Mary, I only endorse clients I believe in. And I've been a spokesman for John Beale for 10 years. It's all about trust. So if, like Mary, you need John Beale, trust me. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
I like supporting local companies that give back to the community. For more than 40 years, Vincent's Jewelers has helped raise more than $1.5 million for local charities. So I'm personally asking that when you're shopping for jewelry, give Vincent's a chance. And in turn, Vincent's will give even more to our community. On Olive, just east of 270, new specials every day on vincentsjewelers.com or Vincent's Facebook.
News, analysis, opinion.
USA, USA! That's a big game, man!
She's really losing control.
Even China didn't ask me about people mowing each other down in a mall.
This is News Talk STL.
It is their responsibility.
He is a metastasizing agent.
We're all keeping a close eye on this.
Illegal immigration is crazy right now.
The United States is not being overrun.
News Talk STL.
It is a crisis at the border without question.
At NewsTalkSTL.com.
This is moving season for many homeowners and businesses. Contact my sponsor, McGuire Moving and Storage. McGuire will come to you, give you a free, honest appraisal. McGuire, fully licensed, insured, local or long distance, with climate-controlled storage. McGuire Moving and Storage has the Larry Connors USA seal of approval. 314-241-0600. 241-0600. McGuire Moving. com.
This is News Talk STL.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I'm not going to sit here on your show and be asked a question meant to shame me about another potential rape victim. I'm not going to do that.
It's actually not about shaming you. It's a question about
Donald Trump. No, you are shaming
me. You've endorsed Donald Trump for president.
Right.
Donald Trump has been found liable for rape by a jury. Donald Trump has been found liable for defaming the victim of that rape by a jury. It's been affirmed by a judge.
It was not a criminal court case, number one. Number two, I live with shame. And you're asking me a question about my political choices, trying to shame me as a rape victim, and I find it disgusting. And this is why women won't come forward.
Women won't come forward because they're defamed by those who perpetrate rape.
Judged and they're shamed, and you're trying to shame me this morning.
I think it's
disgusting.
I'm not shaming you at all.
I told
you
my
courageous.
Story. It took me 25 years to tell my story. I was judged for it. I still get judged for it today.
I'm asking you a very simple question.
You're shaming me for my political choices.
I'm asking you a question about why you endorse someone who's been found liable for rape.
It was not a criminal court.
Do you remember that interview earlier this month? I'm sure you do, because we played some of it for you, and we're going to do more in the second hour again. But that is South Carolina Congresswoman Nancy Mace, as she appeared on ABC with George Stephanopoulos. And he's trying to basically say, how can you possibly support a guy like Trump when you've been a rape victim? Nancy Mace has admitted years ago that when she was 16, she was raped. She's come out, made it public. So putting her name in a rape context, she's done that herself. But here was George Stephanopoulos trying to shame her, because how can you as a rape victim vote for someone like Donald Trump? Kind of like asking someone who's black or brown or yellow or some minority group, how can you vote for Trump when he hates brown people? Well, he doesn't hate brown people. And he's not against those of color. He's for making, quote, America great again. But he doesn't own the slogan. We all want to make America great again, at least those of us who are patriotic and believe in this country, and those who paid the ultimate price for it. And some of you no doubt have lost loved ones who did. But I mentioned President Trump is now suing ABC News, and it's because of that interview. Well, on what grounds, you ask? I'm glad you asked that question. I have the answer. President Trump is suing, taking aim at Stephanopoulos, because as you were hearing at multiple points in his questioning, he said Trump had been found liable for rape. Well, Nancy Mace was correctly pointing out that he was found liable for sexual abuse under New York law, but not rape. Stephanopoulos asked during the interview, judges and two separate juries have found him liable for rape and for defaming the victim of that rape. Trump's attorney wrote in a 20-page complaint, these statements were and remain false and were made by defendant Stephanopoulos with actual malice or with reckless disregard for the truth, given that the defendant Stephanopoulos knows that these statements are patently and demonstrably false. Hit the word the wrong way, and just like Vic Percelli earlier, couldn't quite get it down once I started the wrong way. And the defense for Trump continues, indeed, the jury expressly found the plaintiff, speaking about Donald Trump, did not commit rape, and as demonstrated, defendant George Stephanopoulos was aware of the jury finding in this regard, yet still falsely claimed otherwise. When you get into slander, because that's what he's going after, defamation and slander, when you get into that, there are a couple of hurdles you must get around that you must be able to prove. One, as they've detailed here, reckless disregard for the truth. Now, if I wasn't doing a story about the mayor of certain city took a bribe in his office on this particular date, and I made a mistake. It wasn't on that date. It was the following week, because that date he was in Spain on a trip. So he couldn't have done it. Well, that's a bad mistake on my part, bad reporting, but I thought I had the dates right. Now, if I just transpose numbers, that's also a mistake, but it's not quite going to qualify for reckless disregard. If I know damn well he's not in the city on that date, there's no way he could get it, but I'm going to run the story anyway because that's what a source claims. And then you also have, in addition to the concern, and again, I'm not an attorney, I'm just giving it to you in the way that it's basically looked at, and I've taught other students to keep this in mind. You have the reckless disregard for the truth, the other part being malice. Where I tell the photographer when we leave the story, the interview with the mayor, I said, I got him dead to rights. I'm going to nail him to a cross. He'll never get off of there. And so when the trial comes up and they ask my photographer or someone else I said the same thing to later in the newsroom, what did Larry say about his interview? So you're going to nail him to the cross. You're going to kill him. All these things. Well, that suggests malice. So you combine malice and reckless disregard for the truth, they're probably going to win their case against me. We're going to get into that in more detail in the second hour and more on the Nancy Mace and Stephanopoulos issue. By the way, the Washington Post, Kathleen Parker came out with a piece the other day, last Friday. I just have not had a chance to get to it. Before we get deeper in the week, I want to do it right now. This is an editorial that she published Friday in the Washington Post, and she argued, I do hope Kamala Harris can thrive and shine in her position as second in command. But the Kamala conundrum has come down to this. She was picked because she was black. Now, this is, again, these are the words of the Washington Post, Kathleen Parker, not mine. The Kamala conundrum comes down to this. She was picked because she was black and female, a combo tantamount to job security. Now she has become a burden to the Democratic ticket. Biden can't fire her. He can't risk alternating his base. Full stop. She actually used the words, full stop. And she went on to say, the seriousness of the situation cannot be overstated. Biden's diminishing facilities, I'm sorry, they say faculties. That's bad on my part, misreading. Biden's diminishing faculties, notwithstanding his relatively successful State of the Union address, well, I take offense at that, I disagree, but anyway, she said, and his increasingly physical frailty are concerning. Again, this is Kathleen Parker, The Washington Post. And adding, every honest person knows he's not in top form. She refers to a New York Times survey. 73% of registered voters believe Biden is too old to be the nation's top executive. That includes 61% of those who voted for him in 2020. So it came down to what she was suggesting from the very beginning. It is time for Kamala to step aside, in her words, quote, for the country's sake. I would have loved to see the vice president face when she was presented with that article. Step aside. Me step aside. I'm not saying, so I'll push him over. Then I'll be in there. I don't know what she would have done, but I would have loved to have been that fly on the wall. By the way, speaking about what happens inside the White House, they had a while back a self-declared drag queen as a guest of the White House. You know, they're all about pushing this issue. And this drag queen has been known for some time to be one of the drag stars pushed for queer culture and basically grooming children. Appearing in A Star Is Born with Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, by the way. And there is a close association between drag queens and the political campaign for transgenderism. She herself has promoted drag queen story hour events for children. And yet, She was invited to the White House. Fewer than 2% of Americans claim to be transgender. Well, there's an article out now that Darius Jeremy, DJ Pierce, known as Shangela, is a big hit in the business of drag, where young men portray themselves, or older men, as exaggerations of stereotype femininity. Now, would that not be a cultural violation of woke code? I mean, if I claim I'm an Indian in Indian headdress, but I'm not an Indian, is that not taking away their culture? Is she not taking away the culture of women? Well, of course, women have been thrown under the bus long ago with this woke crowd. But the complaints that have been filed and documented in this article, and I'll give you the source in a moment, that there are at least four different ones who claim that the drag queen tried to force him, herself, upon them when they were drunk. In one part, one was so drunk that he found his mouth being opened and something being inserted. I'll leave that to your imagination. The article written by none other than Rolling Stone magazine. Well, there will be charges, and there will be denials, as expected. Don Lemon Fruitcake. And I reference that not because of his sexual preference. I could care less. It's just because he's kind of crazy nutty. He was a CNN anchor until he got dropped all the way to the bottom of the sea. He's been trying to do a piece on Twitter, his own program, X now. And it was going well, but it got canceled because of an interview he did with Elon Musk. And in fact, I want you to hear a part where he gets schooled on playing the race card by Musk when we continue.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want to give someone something which they will really enjoy? Give them a Cafe Napoli gift card. You pick the amount, and they pick which of the Cafe Napolis they want to visit. Cafe Napoli in Clayton? Cafe Napoli in Town and Country, Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles, or right next door, Napoli C. The Napoli gift card. It's the perfect gift for anyone or your entire office. Cafe Napoli. Cafe Napoli.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
I think we should not make this a constant subject. I think we need to move on. I think we should just, treat people like people.
You don't agree that this country was founded on racism and founded on slavery and in many ways inequities that still continue on to this day?
I think every country at that time, and I think even today, was extremely racist. every country, and obviously slavery was present in about half of this country, and was not present in the North. There was racism for sure, but you know, I think we want to look to the future rather than the past.
Now, that's an excellent idea, as proposed by Musk. Look to the future, not the past. But it wasn't satisfying to Don Lemon Fruitcake, because he wanted Musk to acknowledge, yes, this is a racially systemic country and will always be, because we say it will be, and we're going to continue to divide the races as much as we can. That's where Don Lemon Fruitcake is going with this, but he picked the wrong guy to spar with. He picked an intellect as opposed to one of his goofball follow-arounds, and Musk is not going to have it. And then he begins to expand and lecture Don Lemon Fruitcake on racism.
I think we want to look to the future rather than the past. And instead of engaging in constant rehashing of the past, because in fact, if you look at history, if you study history broadly, everyone was a slave. Everyone.
Yes. Well, not everyone was a slave.
No, everyone was a slave.
Okay, but
we are all descended from slaves.
Yeah.
Well, all of us.
Yeah.
It's just a question of when. Was it more recent or less recent? That's it.
Right.
But what future do we want? Is this something we want to make a part of our constant dialogue forever? Or do we want to say, like, let's just move on and treat everyone, according to just who they are as an individual?
I agree with you with that. That's the ideal. But what the evidence shows is that that's not what's actually in practice.
I think we're doing better than anywhere else.
That's true. I agree with that. But that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean a lot to a whole lot of people who aren't able to take advantage of the opportunities that you were able to take advantage of because of the color of your skin.
Yeah. In other words, because it's not the same, because we got to keep it alive. And he agreed. Don Lemon Fruitcake even agreed. Yeah, we do it better than anyone else. And Musk is right. Biblical times, before biblical times, there were tribes and people chasing and hunting and enslaving various people. We're all descendants of slaves to some extent. I think he's right. But again, Lemon just will not let it go, so Musk is going to fire back on him.
That doesn't mean a lot to a whole lot of people who aren't able to take advantage of the opportunities that you were able to take advantage of simply because of the color of your skin.
What advantages does my color of my skin give me?
Well, there's an ease that you have in society that many people of color don't. You were able to come to this country voluntarily. There are many people who were not able to come to the country voluntarily. There are people who came here as slaves.
For me to come here.
And there is a legacy of slavery that still continues on. There's a legacy of racism that still continues on in this country. That's undeniable.
Well, if we keep talking about it nonstop, it will never go away. If we keep making that the central thing, it will never go away.
Well, why do you believe that?
I think I'm speaking a simple statement of fact. I think we want to get away from making everything a race or a gender or whatever issue, and just treat people like individuals.
Oh, but that doesn't fit the progressive narrative, does it? Let me close on a little brighter note. Boots on the Ground, Andrew, sent this to me. It's from Mashable, which is a global media company. The James Webb Space Telescope has spotted vital chemical two youthful stars on these two stars, one of them being alcohol. They found alcohol in one of these stars. Somebody's out there stealing whiskey. We're going to have to find more about that. Remember our pledge. One nation under God.